I'd like to welcome you this morning. The title of today's sermon is Truth on Trial. So it is, we come in that passage in Mark's Gospel which looks at the trial of Jesus. And that is the Word within us being given over to lower powers, where these things, these lower loves that we have been talking so much about, can be exposed for what they are, so that we can become aware of their destructive nature on a truly spiritual life, where their impact can be seen on the life of charity or loving our neighbour or cultivating within us that genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others. And so it is that the Lord calls us to wholeness, to become whole. And this lower level of life, with its petty loves, is fragmented. It lacks authenticity. And it lacks integrity. Real integrity is wholeness, a binding together, or being complete. And this wholeness lies not just within ourselves as individuals, but it is about a right connection to the Lord first and foremost in His Word, and to each other through expressing those loves of heaven which are His own. This is what wholeness is from a spiritual perspective. It relates to finding our connectedness to everything else in this wonder called creation. We are often dominated by these petty loves, these lower loves that rise up out of our proprium or ego. A little sense of I or me, with its petty likes and dislikes, its petty judgments and criticisms, and its arrogance. And these lower things within us seek to cause division and fragmentation. And so we end up in situations where we lose a sense of connectedness and enter into states of loneliness, states of isolation. Those lower things within us live by a principle of divide and rule. But what the Lord is wanting to do is to bind us together, to pull us together with love. And we will see all this today as we look into Jesus being brought before the Jewish authorities in order to be tried. Let us pray. First reading this morning is from the book of Isaiah, reading chapter 53, verses 1 to 7. Who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of dry ground. He has no form or comeliness. And when we see him, there shall be no beauty that we should desire him. He is despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. Surely he has borne our grief and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray, and we have turned every one to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth, but he was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. Second reading from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 14, verses 53 to 65. And they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes. But Peter followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. And he sat with the servants and warmed at the fire. Now the chief priests and all the council sought testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. For many bore false witness against him, but their testimonies did not agree. Then some rose up and bore false witness against him, saying, "We heard him say, 'I will destroy this temple made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands.'" But not even then did their testimonies agree. And the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, "Do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you?" But he kept silent and answered nothing. Again the high priest asked him, saying to him, "Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?" Jesus said, "I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power, and coming with the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, "What further do we need of witnesses? You have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" And they all condemned him to be deserving of death. Then some began to spit on him, and to blindfold him, and to beat him, and say to him, "Prophesy." And the officers struck him with the palms of their hands. Our reading from the Heavenly Doctrines this morning is from the work Sacred Scripture, paragraph 49. The power of divine truth is first and foremost against false and evil principles, thus against the hells. Combats against the hells ought to be waged by truths derived from the sense of the letter of the word, for it is by such truths that the Lord has the power to save people. It is by truths derived from the sense of the letter of the word that people are reformed and regenerated, and are taken out of hell and introduced into heaven. The Lord assumed this power, even as to his divine human principle, after he had fulfilled all things of the word, which is why he said to the high priest, "Henceforth you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven." We come to this trial of the Lord, where he is brought before the high priest, or the Jewish authorities and the Sanhedrin. Remember last week that a crowd or a mob had come into the garden and had bound the Lord, and now they are taking him to the high priest. And this crowd or this mob is that in us which is easily swayed. One day it's in full support of the Lord, and the next day it is in full support of those who want to destroy him. And so it represents those lower thoughts and affections, that disorganized mass that exists in our lower nature, that swings with whatever is going at the time, whatever seems good, whatever seems to be to one's advantage at a particular point in time. Unruly passions, which change with each opportunity for advancement of selfish ends. There is no consistency at this level of life. no integrity, no ground of principle. The things of the spiritual life seemingly are not able to influence this level of life, at least for a time. There's a level of life which is not governed by that which is higher. Seems chaotic, and often it overrides our spiritual aspirations and our spiritual desires. Our desire to be more loving, to be more compassionate, to be more understanding. These things rise up and they seem to swamp it at times. They seem to dominate things when it suits. Seems to dominate thoughts and affections of goodness and truth, and prevent them being expressed in our life in appropriate ways. And here we see the Lord, the Word within us. And the thing to remember is that this whole process is under the Lord's governance and authority, despite the appearances. It is the Lord who willingly goes, who willingly descends into that realm of the power base of the high priest. And this is the journey of the Word within our own lives. The Lord runs with the process because he must if he is to save us. And we can see this, the operation of these things in our own lives, in those times perhaps where we have been critical of others or quick to judge someone harshly. And we have been allowed to do so, and we have been allowed to have our thoughts progress in that negative state. The process within us often is allowed to run. And it's allowed to run because the Lord is in control. Because it has to run to a certain point before we can get a sense of that selfish behavior rooted within that lower aspect of our nature. You see, the Lord always seeks to deal with the root causes. And so if allowing things to run for a time will bring us to a place where we can see those causes and seek the Lord's strength and ability to deal with them, then that is what must take place. The allowing of these things to run as they are illustrated here draws us closer to the root cause. Draws us closer to that high priest within us all. That high priest being the root, being self-love. And here we see that the Lord gives self-love its head, for it needs to feel in control, so that when we come to see it for what it truly, truly is. This is the realm of the high priest, or if you like in the Greek, the chief sacred one. That which dominates the lower aspect of our own being. And we see illustrated in these verses the structure of selfishness and how it works. For where the high priest is self-love sitting at the center, or that desire to love self more than others, we see that level of life as one of valuing itself, of holding sacred what suits itself. This is the high priest at the center of the worship of self. And we see the structure in that around the chief sacred one are described other high priests, or a collection of high priests. Now, if the high priest represents our selfishness, then these other chief sacred ones represent leading affections that are tied to that center. These are the chief priests. And attached to these chief priests are a raft of rationalizations represented by the elders and the justifications for self-love's activity represented by the scribes. And so we see here how the Lord, or the Word, is drawn to the very center of self-love's power base. And we see that Peter follows. We've looked at Peter a number of times, and he represents our faith, or our confession, our professed belief. And we see that he follows at a distance. And Peter represents our faith because his name means rock. And the rock has to do with foundation principles in our lives. And Peter is often called Simon. And Simon means, or it comes from Simeon, which means hearkening. And it has to do with obedience to the truth, or our understanding of truth. But here we see the name Peter is used on its own. It has to do with truth that is not quite yet ready to do. Not quite ready to be put into practice. This is Peter. And we see the true state of the belief at this stage of the spiritual life. For it is said to be distant. And what is it distant from? Well, it's distant from the Lord. It's distant from truth and love in action. It is something merely of the understanding at this point in time. And so it is that this distant nature of the following illustrates the remote nature of a faith based on understanding spiritual things, but not living in accordance to them. And this is further reinforced when we look at where Peter is. And where is he? Well, he is with the servants of the high priest. You see, when our faith is of the head and not of the life, it sits mixed with false ideas and selfish affections. And it is warmed by that fire. This whole process is one that eventually leads to the separation of that which is evil and false in our lower life, in order that it might become a true servant of the heavenly life. The statement that Peter is by the fire is interesting in this. The Greek word for fire doesn't actually occur in the text. Rather, it should be warming towards the light. And warmth always speaks of affection. And here, because it is within the domain of the high priest, it is selfish affection. And the light that this selfish affection is warmed to is understanding spiritual things, but not being willing to do them. And so it is that there is a tension created within us all. A tension where we have, at a higher level of life, that desire to follow. And yet, these unruly things rising up from beneath that seem to hold us back. And this tension is Peter being in the outer court, or our faith still being in the outer court of those things that are lower. But as an external court, it is an external thing, an external place or state. For we spoke last week about the fact that internally things are very, very different. The Lord has established and grounded things internally. And it is because of those internal things being rooted and grounded within us, so now these more external elements can be exposed for what they are. It is the Lord flowing in to that higher level of life and then descending into that lower darkened realm which draws these things out so that we can deal with them. And so it is that the Lord is brought before the high priest, the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes. And they are looking to condemn him. You see, whenever we are confronted by truth, we have a choice. To heed its voice, or the alternative is justify our rejection of it. What is lowest in us constantly works to dismiss truth's validity in our life. And this is all described here in Jesus being before the high priest and this council. You see, the very presence of truth, the very presence of the Lord's word in our life stimulates the activity of that which opposes the word within us. And it is those lower things are constantly seeking to find the ground on which to make the authority of the Lord's word null and void. The process is one in that truth seeks to dislodge self-love and the selfishness that comes from it from dominating our lives. Self-love always seeks to discredit truth or find fault with it, to accuse it falsely in order to render it powerless and to rob us of a truly spiritual life grounded in the loves of heaven, which are the only things that can make us truly happy. But what happens? We find that this false accusation, these false witnesses, while they're coming forth, nothing can be found to condemn him. You see, the Lord is only interested in our spiritual well-being. And what he asks of us is to make love and wisdom a priority in our life and to clean out those things that prevent those higher loves being expressed through us. And so who could argue with that? Who would argue that love and wisdom should not be the things held up most in our life? There'd be very few who could argue against that. And so it is that the testimonies are said not to agree. You see, acting against truth can only bring disjunction, confusion, fragmentation, and a general lack of agreement within our being. And while no one could disagree that love and wisdom are things that should be most highly valued in our life, when the Lord begins to work to bring that about, then is when we hit the problem. It is then when the Lord begins to touch our attachments, it is then that we become resistant, or that lower life in us becomes resistant. It is when the internal and the external disagree that we enter into the conflicts that are described here. Finally, they find a couple of witnesses who come forth and talk about the Lord's words with regard to the temple. And what comes out there, the accusation is that the Lord said, they said that the Lord had said that he would destroy the temple and that then he would rebuild it. In fact, the Lord did not say that. What he did say is that the temple, destroy this temple and I will raise it up. And what he was saying there was, destroy ye this temple, or if you should destroy this temple, I will rebuild it. And of course, in John's Gospel, we learn that he talked about the temple of his body. And the body is that which contains the Lord. The body of thought that contains the Lord within us. As a temple that needs to be broken down is that understanding that is not linked to doing. We spoke about this when we looked at these words of the Lord. It is the building up of thinking not connected to life. That is the temple that must be pulled down. And we must enter into that process in order that the Lord can raise up a new body of thought. A body of thought that is grounded in charity. That is what he is seeking to do. But where self-love is concerned, while it is happy to have its temple and to rest in thinking about spiritual things but not doing them, so the presence of the Word which challenges that state of life causes fear to arise in that lower realm, produces fear, a fear that misconstrues what truth is actually seeking to accomplish in our life. Hence, the way that the words were framed by those witnesses. Jesus never said that he would destroy the temple. But the fear of that lower life as the word begins to make inroads into it, that fear sees only death, loss, and grief. To the self. As the Lord draws near, so it desperately looks for ways to hold him out. And it does it by trying to make truth appear as something false and what is good as something evil. Because these things, because the word opposes its life. The high priest seeks to condemn the truth by means of what is true, or that truth that it has but does not put into practice in life. The problem for the high priest is that truth always agrees with truth. For truth to contradict itself is impossible. And so the word exposes our motives to resist in resisting the approach of this truth. And if we resist it and we will not bend, then we are left with having to find ways of how it might be contradicted. And because the high priest and that whole establishment based its authority on the scriptures, he needed the scripture to confirm his position. And we too can fall into doing this where we take something out of context to justify our point of view, without being willing to look at the fact that it contradicts some basic teaching. Judging another person or criticizing them because they mightn't fall into our view of what a spiritual person should be is to take truth and to use it harshly. It's to apply it without any reference to compassion. This high priest rising in the midst to question Jesus is our own lower reasoning faculties looking for something in the Word to justify our position, to justify not having to make the changes in our life that the Word challenges us to make. The Word cannot support what is false. And so it is that we see that the Lord is silent. He doesn't answer. But when it comes to the question of His divinity, it cannot be silent. For the Word is divine, and this is declared openly throughout. The high priest, in asking Jesus if He was the Son of the Most High, renders a confession. And the Lord's response is too much for it. It is too much, for the nature of self-love is now to be exposed. And in its utter rejection of the Lord, or of the Lord's word, it says it speaks blasphemy, because it speaks against that life that self-love is seeking to preserve. And so there is this switch where what is evil is seen as good, and what is false is seen as true. In doing so, in this utter rejection of the authority of the word in its life, having concealed itself up to this point in garments which represent truths taken from the Word, in the text, in the English, it says he rips his clothes, but actually in the Greek it says he burst through. And we get this idea of self-love becoming exposed in its totality. And it looks to the council. And again, here what we see is those reasoning faculties that the council represent being in full agreement with that love, that selfish love which has burst forth the garments. And in that agreement, so the process is drawing to its conclusion, because that state of life lives in hatred of the things to do with the spiritual life. And so there is an agreement that the Lord is deserving of death. So how can we understand these things? It's important that we become aware of the operation of these principles in our life. That is why they're laid down in the Word, so that we can go to the Word, study it, learn how these things operate in us, because they rob us of the spiritual life. And you can look at it like this. At one level, we have our spiritual understanding. We know that we should love the Lord, love our neighbour. We know all these things. At another level of life, we are well aware of the dominance of selfishness and the false thinking that goes with it. These things have been exposed in us all if we are on the spiritual path. So, what happens to those higher things when we engage in behaviour that is opposed to them, where we are critical of others, where we judge harshly, when we begin to gossip, what happens to those principles that we have learnt? Well, they come into the outer court and they warm themselves by a fire, a selfish affection. And we lose sight of what life is all about, and we get caught up in these things. Our faith at that point is distant. At one level, yes, we want to follow the Lord, but in our behaviour, we have become distant from Him. This is being in the high priest's courtyard. And when we engage in this behaviour, we are bearing false witness. Because where we profess one thing and live another, there is something wrong. And that can have an effect, not just in terms of our own life, but an effect of our life as a witness before others. Subconsciously, they see the power of the testimony connected with your life being weakened. We may or we may not become aware of what's happening, but usually when we are in the effort of trying to live according to the Lord's word, And that is all the Lord asks of us, to be in the effort. He is still governing the process, even where we get caught up in these lower things and our spiritual life appears to be distant from Him. He will let the process run for as long as it is needful, but it is important that when we realize what's going on, that we actually do something about it. The Lord will give us insight into our behavior. This is His word working within us. It is His word coming from that higher place and shining its light into that lower nature of our selfishness. And as that process occurs, so we can see for ourselves how it is that self-love constantly tries to discredit the operation of these principles in our life. How our reasoning begins to function at that lower level in order to justify these behaviors that we know at another level are wrong. It's important we come to see how these things operate. Because if we don't come to see them, we can't identify our evils and we can't resist them and seek the Lord's assistance in doing that. You see, to that lower level of life, it will always justify what it does. It always sees itself as being right. And when truth challenges it, the initial response from that level of life is to see that truth as something evil and false. These higher principles are given to us so that that response can be curtailed and cut off as it makes its move. That is the vital aspect of living the spiritual life, of doing what we know we should do when these lower things rise up. The Lord has provided the means by which these things can be seen in us. It is His word and the truths drawn from the literal sense of the word, which are the spiritual teachings of the church. It is by these things we saw in our reading from the sacred scriptures. It is by these things that we can be reformed and regenerated and so enter into the life of heaven and its joys. But we must do. Amen.